Pancha. Five. Shirsha. Heads. Ahna. By a snake. Guptam. Protected. Prati Harena. By a bodyguard. Sarvataha. All around. Anveshamanam. One who is searching after. Rishabam. A husband. Aprodam. Not very old. Kamarupanim. Very attractive to fulfill lusty desires. The translation. The woman was protected on all sides by a five-hooded snake. She was very beautiful and young, and she appeared very anxious to find a suitable husband. If you can repeat. The woman was protected on all sides.
The woman was protected on all sides.
By a five-hooded snake.
She was very beautiful and young.
And she appeared very anxious
to find a suitable husband.
So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, The vital force of the living entity includes the five kinds of air working within the body, which are known as prana, apana, vyana, samana, and udana. The vital force is compared to a serpent because a serpent can live simply by drinking air. The vital force carried by the air is described as the patihara, or the bodyguard. Without the vital force, one cannot live for a moment. Indeed, all the senses are working under the protection of the vital force. The woman who represents intelligence was searching after a husband. This indicates that intelligence cannot act without consciousness. A beautiful woman is useless unless protected by the proper husband. Intelligence must always be very fresh. Therefore, the word aprodam, very young, is used here. Material enjoyment means utilizing the intelligence for the sake of arupa, rasa, gonda, sabda, and sparsha, or form, taste, smell, sound, and touch. The panchashirshayina guptam. Patiharena sarvataha anveshamanam nishapam aprodam kamarupanim. Aum ganat miranda shaganjana shlakaya chakshur miditam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. So there's basically three topics being discussed in this verse. The first topic, of course, is the life heirs, the five different life heirs. The second topic is the protection of women in society. And the third topic, intelligence, the proper use of intelligence, or what does intelligence do, how to keep intelligence fresh. So we'll try to touch upon these three different topics. Of course, the first one is the different life heirs which are described here, prana, apana, vyana, samana, and udana. And so there's the upward air, the downward air. There's an air which helps us digest. There's an air that helps us evacuate, etc., like that. So the Vedic conception of having good health, we're talking about mental health and physical health, is based upon the balance of the life airs, the proper functioning of the life airs. The Ayurvedic system in general is based upon balancing things. Like you have the doshas, the kapha dosha, which means mucus, not just like the gross mucus. You know, like when you sneeze, that's not really what it's a subtle sort of mucus. And then there's pitta, which is the fire. It's not exactly fire, but it's a more subtle type of conception. And vayu, which is air. And so you have these three different constitutions. And let's say someone is extremely kapha, then practically anything they eat goes to fat. And they like sleeping a lot. They're very lethargic. That's generally like the mode of ignorance. They're very lethargic. You can actually tell someone's constitution just by looking at their body and their face. You know, they're chubby, double chin, triple chin, different things like that. So that, and you know, just like by their activities, their kapha, they have a hard time getting up in the morning. The alarm clock goes off. They hit the sleep button or the snooze button. And then it goes off again. They hit the snooze button again. And they really can't get up early in the morning. It's really hard. It's not... So these different constitutions or different doshas can be adjusted through different lifestyle changes. You know, different changes in the lifestyle or different changes in the diet, exercise, association, etc. So that's a kapha constitution. And we see quite a bit of that. And then, of course, eating food that stimulates the kapha also increases the kapha constitution. Like you eat food that's very, like the fatty or in the mode of ignorance, or you eat at the wrong time of the day. Like you have a, I know in New Orleans, for example, there's a lot of devotees from India, different places in India. And what happens is they eat at 11 o'clock at night. They cook at 11 o'clock at night and they eat at midnight. How do I know that? Because my room is directly above the kitchen. So I can hear like the fan going and all the kids cooking going and all the joyfulness going at 11 o'clock at night. And at Mangal Arati, it's basically me there. Well, actually the first day they come just to make a good show. And then the second day it's basically me at Mangal Arati. And the temple president happens to come, but he's rubbing his eyes at the same time. So, or people who have this constitution where they're night people, you know, they go out at night and they become lively at night. That's like the kapha constitution. So, all right, so that's kapha, and then that's, you know, almost a pure kapha constitution. And then vata, that means the air constitution. You got to be very careful. They're just like, can float off into the never land, you know, into the air, just by the little bit of stimuli, you know, they're just like really spaced out. And pitta, yeah, you can turn that off, because that's like white noise. White noise means put you to sleep. So pitta constitution is like they're just like angry, enthusiastic, you know, they're, I guess most sports stars would be mostly pitta constitution. You know, people who run these marathons, etc. It takes like a pitta constitution. And there's foods and these different things. So anyway, so diseases, each one of those constitutions has specific diseases that they get. I mean, someone in the kapha constitution would get like liver disease, if the liver is overloaded with everything. And someone with a vata would just get like a nervous constitution. You know, they're just like on edge. Not on edge in terms of getting angry, but they just like have nervous breakdowns really easily. And, you know, pitta, what would it be? A pitta constitution disease. I guess it would be too much. They would have ulcers because there's too much acid being produced in the stomach. Anyway, so there's different diseases. So the Vedic conception is you balance these three things. You balance the doshas, you balance the life airs, because disease, it's a different concept of disease than the Western concept. It's actually based on the word disease, dis-ease. Dis-ease means that there's some imbalance, it's not at ease. You understand? So the Western concept is you generally deal with the effects rather than the cause of the disease. For example, if someone gets cancer, they just want to cut it out, right? Doesn't they go in with a knife or they go in with a chemotherapy? You know, chemotherapy is like a shotgun approach. It sort of destroys everything on the body. You know, your hair falls out and everything like that. Or they have a radiation therapy, like which is also causes so many problems. But they don't really understand where the cancer comes from, or where different diseases come from. Or there's the germ theory. Of course, germs do exist. We agree, and bacteria exists, and viruses exist. But the reason the body succumbs to these things is because the body's immune system is weaker, because the doshas are not balanced, because the life airs are not balanced. And so similarly with mental diseases. You know, mental diseases nowadays, of course, you go to see a psychiatrist, they don't even talk to you about it. They just basically prescribe some medicine. You know, they give you like antidepressant or lithium if you're bipolar. There's so many different medicines you have. But basically Ayurveda can take care of all these things if it's applied properly. So these life airs protect the soul within the body and also protect the intelligence, because if the life air is not functioning properly, your intelligence is not going to be properly functioning. Okay, so that's the first point. The life airs, which are the bodyguard. So the second point I wanted to mention was that Prabhupada points out here in the verses the conception of protection of women. I mean, nowadays it's not such a popular topic that women have to be protected. And this is because, and I'm going to explain it in such a way that you all don't get angry, hopefully. So this is because of the nature of women, because basically women have very strong feelings, emotions, and these emotions, of course, men have strong emotions too, I understand that. But the men have the ability, because of the brain, the nature of the brain, not so much the size of the brain, but because of the interconnections between both halves of the brain. You know, you got the left brain and the right brain. The left brain is like your logical brain. It's like Mr. Spock in Star Trek. Anyone seen that? No. No one's seen that. Anyway, the left half is logical, the right half is your emotional. And there's a lot of interconnections. So, therefore, women tend, there's exceptions, tend to be overcome in many instances by emotions. But men, some men, not all men, it's Kali Yuga, I know there's exceptions. Men can sort of like turn a switch and turn off the emotions and just become very logical. And that's why you even talk about demons, for example. Men make the best demons. I mean, if you look at the history of demons in the Vedic literature, the real big demons are always men, as far as I can see. I mean, you can say Putin was a demon, but she wasn't a real big one. She was just like caught in the family life. You know, her family, she had Palambasura was her brother, you know. She just had bad associations. But she wasn't in charge of other demons. When I'm talking about demons, big demons, I'm talking about a demon that actually runs other demons. You understand what I'm talking about? Like Ravana. Like Ravana, he's in charge of the whole demoniac force. Where Sirpanaka, his sister, wasn't. She just fell in love, you know, succumbed to her emotions, fell in love with Ram. That's it. Thus, she didn't have a lot of little demons, you know, had a whole kingdom of demons. If you look at the Vedic history, and I can't think of an exception, maybe there is, of a great demoniac king. I can't think of any great demoniac queens, and you know, that we're talking about in Vedic history. Because the men, they can be really good at being demons. Anyway. So there's a downside and an upside to being a man or a woman. Whereas the women are more sentimental. And generally you find, let's say in the Vedic literatures, that when Ravana was wanting to fight Ram, he was continually advised by his wife, Mandodari, to give back Sita. I mean, she was giving good advice. Whereas Ravana had just like was completely determined to be a good demon, or a bad demon, as the case may be. So, therefore, it requires, as Prabhupada very, very much mentioned, it requires that the ladies be protected by the proper situation. Now, nowadays, of course, the men are exploiting the women, so the women somehow or other are arranging for their own protection because they've been abused, they've been mistreated, they can't really trust anybody. I mean, that happens. That's quite understandable. So it's men, like Prabhupada said, that created the feminist movement. It's men that are, because if men actually protected their wives or protected women in society in general, then the ladies would feel very comfortable. And even nowadays, children aren't protected. So the children are developing a sense of independence. What do we mean by children aren't protected? That the parents are no longer parents. I mean, the children are basically latchkey kids. Latchkey kids means both parents are working. So the child comes back, and he has a key to the door, and he opens the door in the house, and he has the house to himself, and then he does whatever. You know, he's not properly protected. Just like I was recently in Seattle visiting, staying in the house of two of my disciples, Dinesh and Govinda Gopal, and I could see that, you know, they're really protecting their children. I mean, she's one of those things that's very rare nowadays. It's called the stay-at-home mom. You know, it's a rare species, almost due to be extinct. That she stays home, she homeschools the kids, and the kids are actually homeschooled. They're actually, one of them is 5 years old, and he has the intelligence of an 8 or 9 year old. His name is Shribas. And it's very interesting to see how well balanced he is. They both are. They both are very, very well balanced children. One is only about 2 years old. The other one is 5 years old. So I've seen how the children are protected. Then they actually remain very well emotionally balanced. And usually, it's too early to predict now, but usually they follow in the parents' footsteps as they remain loyal to the family, and if the family is Krishna conscious, then the children will take up Krishna consciousness because they feel this protection in the family. I mean, that's natural. Children should be protected, women should be protected, Brahmins should be protected, old people should be protected, cows should be protected. This is part of Vedic society. Even a cow, talking about a cow that's not protected, just like, I'll give you an example. We had a cow that we got later on in life that wasn't protected. Her name was Rohini. Anyone remember Rohini? No. You remember Rohini. So we had two cows. One cow was named Devyani. And not the Devyani we were talking about yesterday. That's a different story. And the other cow was named Rohini. Okay. So Devyani was taken care of from her very birth. She was protected by, there was a devotee, Shudajiva, who had her first, and then we brought her here. And she was an amazing cow. She would attend the Sunday feast with the rest of the devotees. Is that Mother Krishna Priya, remember? She would eat prasadam, sit down and eat prasadam with the rest of the devotees. Yeah, we had a deck, a lower deck, next to the trailer we had at the temple, and she would stick her head through the slats of the wood slats in the seat, and we'd give her a plate, and she'd eat prasadam with all the rest of the devotees. She'd be very peaceful. I would go out, you know, I wanted to take a nap at midday. I'd go out and just like take a nap with her, you know, put my head on her. You know, you don't do that normally with a cow because it's very dangerous. I go out to the field, and anyway, it was quite nice. And then, so she was a protected cow. Very nice. And then we had an unprotected cow, Rohini. Rohini was purchased later on. One of our, I think his name was Bala something. Anyway, he wanted to purchase a cow for the temple. So we went out and we purchased the cow, the same breed. It was a Jersey breed, same exact thing. And so I went out. It was interesting. We went out with a, we had a station wagon. We had a cow trailer we pulled behind it. And it was, the station wagon wasn't really built to pull a cow. It was just a small station wagon. So we went to some city. Were you here at that time, Mother Christian Priya? No. No, that was before you came, I think.
No, I think I was here.
Okay. So we went and we brought Rohini back. But, you know, Rohini, trying to deal with her was like being at a rodeo. I don't know if you know what a rodeo is. A rodeo is when you have, you know, the cowboys, they ride on their horses trying to rope the cows or the bulls. And the bull sometimes throws them off the horse. You know, it's just like, it's like bull wrestling, basically. She wasn't a bull, she was a cow. So dealing with her was like, because she was unprotected. She was what we call skittish. So she developed her own means of protection or independence, whereas Devyani was more protected and dependent. And you're a very, very wonderful cow. It's a shame she left her body, but these things do happen. And even milking Devyani, she would just stand there. You didn't need a barn. You didn't need anything. She would just stand there. You just say, it's time for milk. And she would say, okay, where do you want me to stand? And almost like, you remember that, Mother Krishna? It was almost like that. I mean, just like, you didn't have to tie your legs. You wouldn't worry about it kicking the bucket over, kicking you, or anything like that. It was just like, you know, you put the bucket down and say, okay, let your milk down. And it was like opening up the spigot, almost. So, anyway, there's a practical example. How that if someone is protected, then the good qualities are more likely to develop. Of course, modern society means that people are exploiting. So it's hard to figure out a proper dynamic. Ultimately, we have to establish varnashram as Srila Prabhupada wanted, but it's hard to figure out a proper dynamic because you can't force someone into that situation. Like, we couldn't force Rohini. I mean, no matter what we said to her, we couldn't force her into a situation that she would be protected. She would understand she was being protected. So it's difficult dealing with a situation nowadays. But that's the point that Prabhupada is making here. And he says, a beautiful woman is useless unless protected by the proper husband. Specifically, a beautiful woman, because she'll be, there'll be people who will attempt to victimize her, utilizing her emotional nature to try to victimize her and to try to exploit her. So that's why Prabhupada said that men are the source of the women's liberation movement. So, okay. And that's the second point I wanted to make. Third point is about intelligence. So intelligence, Prabhupada says, intelligence, and that's the third point Prabhupada makes in the purport. Intelligence must always be very fresh. So fresh means, in this particular case, clear. Understand? Clear. Like if you're imbalanced, if you're overcome either by emotions or your doshas are imbalanced, even if some physical, like if you're having some pain in your body, your intelligence is not very clear. Like, I'm sure if you ask Mahamantra, you know, his toothache, then his face was swollen up. Are you able to think that clearly and quote different shastra and learn different verses? He'll probably say, no, it's very difficult to do that. So if there's some imbalance, either through the life airs or through the emotions or the different need, even if you're very hungry, it's hard for the intelligence to be clear, right? Like if you're extremely hungry, just thinking of food. So if there's a pressing need, just like Prabhupada told that funny story, Gopal Bhan story, that Gopal Bhan was with the king, and they were out, and the king asked Gopal Bhan, how do you feel? And Gopal Bhan said, I'm very happy that I just passed stool. And so the king got really upset with him at that point. He said, how could you talk like that? So for a while they didn't talk to each other. The king was, you know, just like, I'm offended by your bringing these scatological comments in the whole discussion. So later on, they were both on a boat together, and the king had a call of nature. Prabhupada told the story. the king had a cold, and all the king could think about was that he had to go to the bathroom. So he told Gopal Bhan, you know, take the boat to the shore. And Gopal Bhan really went slow at it, just to allow the king to, you know, savor the moment, so to speak. So he just was very slow rowing the boat. And eventually they got to the shore. The king jumped off the boat, ran into the bushes, and evacuated. And then the king got back, and Gopal Bhan said, how do you feel? And the king said, very happy. So the point is, if there's some imbalance, either emotionally, physically, mentally, psychologically, I mean, you won't have fresh intelligence. So one has to be very cool-headed. Another example that Prabhupada gave, and I've mentioned this example many times, is that when Prabhupada was talking to a girl who had a very short skirt on, a mini skirt, and the girl asked, she was a reporter or something, the girl asked, you know, why do you have a shaved head? And Prabhupada said, that's to keep the head cool. And then Prabhupada said, it's better to have a cool head and warm legs instead of vice versa. Because the girl had, you know, she was hot-headed and she had cool legs because the legs were exposed and it was probably cold weather or something like that. So that's the point, to have a very cool head, not to have the thought process is disturbed by so many emotions. And to do that, you've got to be able to, you know, switch off sometimes the emotion. Just think very coolly, strategically, as they say. That's why we have, in ISKCON, we have strategic planning. Because if you plan, you do your planning in the heat of the moment, it doesn't come out very well, usually. That's ad hoc. You know, ad hoc means like spontaneous planning. Like for example, if you're thinking about who's supposed to dress the deities one particular moment, and it's 1 minute before the deity is supposed to be dressed, that's not cool management. Then you're running around. Can you dress the deities? Can you dress? No, I can't. I'm not clean. You know. So therefore, he who fails to plan plans to fail. Right? You ever hear that before? He who fails to plan plans to fail. So that means because you're having a hot head. Management should always be done, when practical, with a cool head. You know, you sit down, you talk to people. It's not that you just run by someone in the kitchen and say, can you do that tomorrow? You know, management should be done very, very coolly. That's proper management. So anyway, so that's what Prabhupada means by intelligence should always be fresh. Not influenced by other factors. One should just plan things out. So, and then Prabhupada distinguishes material intelligence from spiritual intelligence. He doesn't specifically talk about spiritual intelligence. Here he talks specifically about material intelligence, and implicit is the understanding of spiritual intelligence. And so material intelligence means how to plan out your life so that you will see things beautiful. That's rupa. Rupa means form. Like Krishna's original form is called swayam rupa. So you will actually see beautiful things in the world. Like you might plan to go to the beach, for example, and see the shore, see the beautiful waves. Or you may plan to go to the mountains in the West Coast. And you see the beautiful mountains, just like I was recently in Washington State, and they have this Mount Rainier there. Mount Rainier is a very beautiful mountain. There's snow on the top, even in the middle of the summer. And there's also like volcanoes there. We were in Hawaii. We would sometimes take a plane to Hawaii, because I was at GBC there, we'd fly over the volcano, and it's very beautiful to see all the lava coming out. Of course, you wouldn't want to be down on the ground with the lava. To see the lava coming out and forming new land. And you would walk on the lava beds after they cooled down. The beach wasn't, in many places, the beach on the Big Island wasn't sand. It was actually the lava bed. You can actually see, like, you see that, Mother Christopher, here? You've been there? Like, you've seen that. It was like you know, it was like rocks, but interesting looking rocks. So it's something so beautiful. Or even a iceberg is a beautiful thing. I go to Alaska and you see an iceberg. So that's rupus. You're planning out, like, you know, my vacation, I'm going to go see something beautiful. Or I'm going to go see this movie, like that. And then after that you have rasa, which means taste. So you're planning out what you're going to cook tonight. Or sometimes we even go on Facebook, not sometimes, and we see people, they post on Facebook, I just ate the most delicious pumpkin pie. I mean, that's it. And they have a picture of it or something like that. And they talk about what they eat on Facebook. I mean, it's just like, huh? Usually I post pictures of the deities or, you know, something, seminar or something like that. But people using intelligence to try to figure out what to eat, how to enjoy life, that's rasa. Rasa basically means taste. And then we were speaking about this the other day. Then ganda means smell. It's like I'm planning for Janmashtami to attract people to a booth by having different smells. The smell of popcorn, the smell of cookies. Because I saw that at the Rath Yatra in Vancouver, people were attracted to smelly soap much more than what I was doing there, which is just talking about charitable activities and feeding people. But because the soap had all these different flavors to it. It was just, people were lined up like, you know, 20 people trying to buy soap. So, and then shabda, hearing something. People go to concerts, right? So many nice concerts. Of course, shabda pramana, that's the Vedic literature, which is evidence of sound, or the sound which is the evidence, is good. And then finally, sparsha, touch. And that's why children like teddy bears. You wouldn't have a teddy porcupine. Or, you know, isn't it? I mean, can you imagine, like, someone has a little doll and it's like pins sticking out of it, and they go to bed with it. You know, it would be unbelievable. So they want to have something nice to touch, something soft, and like a soft blanket or soft pillowcase or soft sheet, or, you know, just touching something very... So anyway, so we're planning out how to do that. So that's material intelligence and spiritual intelligence. So one has a cool... Well, let's stick with material intelligence for a second. So... If one really wants to enjoy the material world, they have to have a cool mind how to plan out their enjoyment. You understand? They can't just... Because someone's in the mode of ignorance, they have a hot mind. You know, they just don't plan things out. And they can't even enjoy the material world. So if you really want to enjoy, you've got to plan things out properly. So if you want to be Krishna conscious, you have to have a cool mind to plan things out properly for advancement in Krishna consciousness. And... accept or reject things, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, the first two surrendering principles, accepting things favorable for Krishna consciousness, rejecting things unfavorable, just very coolly, no matter whether you're attracted to it or not, you have to discriminate, because intelligence means discrimination, cool discrimination. You have to discriminate on the basis of what's helpful, what brings you closer to Krishna. However you feel about it, at that point you just ignore the feelings, really. And you just say, you know, I may feel this way, I may feel that. You know, no, nobody likes to do austerities, but this will actually help me advance. I'm going to wake up early. I don't want to wake up early. I'm just like when I joined the movement. I was accustomed to waking up at 10 o'clock in the morning. But then I thought, you know, I want to advance, and therefore I'm going to do this, which goes against... everything I've done before goes against what I'd like to do. But I'm going to do this because this is my goal. It's very much goal-oriented and discrimination on the basis of goal-oriented, and that's intelligence. And that's what we have to develop. So any questions or comments? We have about 5 seconds left to class. Yeah. Yeah. How can you keep it clear? By eating properly, meeting your needs, both physical and mental. Because this is, Bhaktivinoda talks about that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, says you can't make spiritual investment unless your needs, your basic needs, are being met. So you have to understand what your needs are. So that's important too. That keeps your intelligence cool. Like if you're hungry, you're not going to have a cool intelligence. It's just practical. If you're in pain, you're not going to have a cool intelligence. So the basic needs have to be met too. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jai Radhakalokananda ki jai.